This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Christian Camargo. This past spring, the Hinckley Institute of Politics held its fourth annual Hip Talks two-minute speech competition on the campus of the University of Utah. Students were invited to speak through a series of qualifying rounds before reaching the final competition. The competition awarded significant cash prizes for the best speakers. The HIP in Hip Talks is short for Hinckley Institute of Politics. For the final competition, 30 students performed before a panel of judges and an audience of several hundred people at the Bill Child Community Hall in the Spencer Fox Eccles Business Building on the campus of the University of Utah. Also, you can find a link to listen to the full recording of these Hip Talk speeches under the webpage for this show. As for today, we'll be airing as many speeches as we can squeeze into an hour-long public radio program while reserving the final six winning student speeches for the end of the hour. The final round of the 2018 Hip Talks was held earlier this year on April 11th. This first speech by Taylor Checkett is titled Complete.
So I have acrophobia and glossophobia, where acrophobia is fear of heights. So I am dying right now. But I'm Taylor. I'm going to be talking today about mixed race identity. The Japanese word for mixed race is konketsu. It's a word that consists of two characters that each have their own separate meaning. The first character, kon, means confused, disorganized, or chaotic. And the second character, ketsu, means blood. Konketsu, confused blood. This language reflects how civilizations have had a negative perception of people of mixed race identity for thousands of years. And it's not just Japanese. Take, for instance, purebred. To be pure means to be free of contaminants and unnecessary elements. I remember when I first came to the University of Utah, a man who I've never met before approached me and asked, "Excuse me, are you half?" To which I replied, No, I'm not. I put half and half in my coffee, and I sometimes half-ass my assignments, but I'm not half a person. From his perspective, it makes sense. If my parents are of different races and they each contributed to half my genome, then I must be half and half. But if I have 5.5 liters of blood, does that mean that 2.75 liters are white and 2.75 liters are Japanese? Because to date, I've never gone to donate blood and been asked how much of it is Japanese. Our tendency to define people by simple fractions is problematic because it seems to imply that race and ethnicity and nationality are competitive. That if I'm Japanese, I must be less American. If I'm less American, I must be more Japanese. And at best, it seems to imply that I'm a fragment of my heritage and identity. And my identity, regardless of whether I'm in Japan or the US, does not fully belong. I don't think of myself as konketsu. I think of myself as zenketsu, where zen means whole, entire, and complete, because I'm a complete person. And so is my brother, and so is my sister. And regardless of where you're from, what you believe, or what you look like, we are all zenketsu, and we deserve to be treated that way. Thank you.
That was Taylor Checkett with his speech titled Complete. This next speech looks at the value of being polite and is by Alexis Koopman, titled Closed Doors.
Hi, I'm Alexis Koopman, and I'm a computer engineering student here at the U, and my speech is called Closed Doors. I've stood in front of the Peterson Heritage Center and watched people not hold doors for each other. What I find fascinating, though, is as soon as I or another person holds the door for someone else, there's suddenly a chain of people who will hold the door for each other. Conformity is defined as the tendency to align one's attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors with those around them. It's a powerful force that can take the form of overt social pressure or subtler unconscious cues. Think about it. Last time you made a decision, did you critically analyze it, or did you rely on habit, maybe a precedent set by others? Conformity isn't inherently good or bad, yet experiments like the Stanford Prison Experiment prove if we don't take time to understand how our environment's impacting us, we might fall prey to larger consequences. For example, the volunteer prison guards in this experiment, normal people, got so unquestionably into their roles that they started beating and abusing volunteer prisoners after hours when the experiment was turned off. Some of the darkest tragedies in history were a result of not asking enough questions. So be brave, be well informed, know the extent of your moral compass, and waver not for facts, protests, politics, people that can't stand up to scrutiny. Please invest in what you believe in. not just what's trendy. Don't march because everyone is marching. March because you have a cause. It only takes a single person to start this door-holding chain. I've seen it. I admire these people. I dare you, be the person who holds open that door. Not because everyone else is doing it, and not because I told you to, but because it is kind.
That was Alexis Koopman with her speech titled Closed Doors. This next speech is titled Grandfather by Peter Johnston.
Okay, my name is Peter Johnston. I want you all to close your eyes for a brief moment. I want you to imagine your 17-year-old self walking down the stairs of your two-story Salt Lake City home, and your parents are on the landing. And your parents tell you a story about how this morning they were trawling around Salt Lake City and met a man named Peter, unfortunate name, with a turban on his head and a poster that said that Jesus Christ was coming to visit the Arizona desert. Here comes the rapture, folks. You can open your eyes. This story actually happened. It's my grandfather's story, and it's the beginning of his story. Now, they left, and he was alone with his 16-year-old sister, who immediately married off to support herself. This man, my grandfather, was evicted by the same bank that owned the house. He lived in streets, he lived in empty rooms and empty attics of old ladies' houses. And why do you ask that I bring up this story? It's because of his grit. Because what happens next is, as the Japanese proverb suggests, fall down 7 times, stand up 8. My grandfather went to the University of Utah, good man. He took one of the most difficult programs provided, the aerospace engineering program, where the professors literally tried to flunk their kids. And he didn't flunk. In fact, he became a regular at Hill Air Force Base, where he went to the Egyptian desert to find out why F-4 Phantom 2 planes crashed in the Egyptian sand dunes. This is the man who taught himself how to restore cars so that when I was young, I could take a ride in a white-walled, chromed-out Thunderbird around Bountiful, Utah. This is the man who was not burned at the rapture. This is the man who taught himself how to design the Minuteman missile for the U.S. government. This is the man who now sets out Easter eggs for his grandkids in our Easter egg hunts. And this is the man who every single morning and weekdays mops by himself the floor of the Bountiful food pantry. This is the sort of man I want to be. This is my grandfather.
That was Peter Johnston with his speech titled Grandfather. This next speech takes a look at our current generation with Tressie Rollins' speech titled Selfie Generation.
My name is Tressie Rollins, and my speech is called Hashtag Selfie Generation. With the immediate access to new information, countless court cases fighting injustice and abuse, global warming, plastic in the oceans, and animals going extinct, millennials and post-millennials are the ones fighting for change. We're the ones walking out of schools, protesting in DC, and fighting for things that should have changed long ago. We're crippled by debt, we'll end up working for the rest of our lives, and yet are more aware of the issues that will face future generations. We grew up in a time of terrorist attacks and wars. We grew up during a recession and watched as our parents flounder for their jobs and their homes. We are called the selfie generation and are endlessly told that we are not good enough. I'm calling you out. I'm calling out all the generations before us. We did not cause these issues, and yet we are the ones being left to sweep up the mess. Many of us are just barely old enough to vote. We are more educated and less likely to get jobs. You look down on the people serving you at McDonald's, but that's the only option. Houses and apartments are so expensive that many of us are stuck living in our parents' basements, and that's just another thing to mock us for. You call us lazy, you call us dependent, but I see one of the most hardworking, politically charged generations. We want to do better. We want to change the world. We are fighting for each other, standing up for what we believe in, even as our hands shake in fear of repercussions. We are trying to save the planet, even though many people don't believe there's an issue. And we are mocked. We are blamed. We're called fragile. We're called snowflakes. But guess what? We are snowflakes. We're going to come down heavy, destroy things you didn't know could change. We're going to come down together, blinding you. We'll blanket the planet and fall in places you never knew snow could fall. And we're going to save it, because that's what you want us to do, right? Thank you.
That was Tressie Rollins with her speech titled Selfie Generation. This next speech by Jackson Keller is titled Waffles and World Records.
I'm Jackson Keller, and I am most likely a world record holder. Every weekday, since I was about 4 or 5, I've had 2 Eggo waffles for breakfast. And sure, sometimes on weekends, I have other food for breakfast. But I've eaten a lot of Eggo waffles. I estimate conservatively about 6,000 Eggos. If you were to stack those Eggos, one on top of another, that stack would be 250 feet tall. If you were going to put them in a line next to each other, that line would be 2,125 feet long. That's longer than the One World Trade Center is tall, the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. Of course, Guinness doesn't keep track of a record like this, most Eggo waffles eaten. It's impossible to verify. But even if there were a record, and even if having that record meant a lifetime supply of Eggo waffles, it wouldn't have changed a thing. This may seem obvious, but I didn't eat so many Eggos because of the fame or fortune of a world record. I ate so many Eggos because I enjoy them. They're sweet, they're comforting. If you have them with peanut butter and syrup, or peanut butter and fruit, they can even be a little nutritious. But I wouldn't say that I love Eggos, or that they're one of my favorite foods. I just like them, so I'm intrinsically motivated to eat them. But let's talk about intrinsic motivation. That is, motivation driven by internal goals or desires rather than an external reward. Because so often, we associate this concept with passion and with all the burdens and expectations that come with a term like that. And sure, intrinsic motivation can be a burning passion or a quest for fulfillment, but it doesn't have to be. It can just be your Eggo waffle, the thing that makes each day a little bit better. Thank you.
That was Jackson Keller with his speech titled Waffles and World Records. This next speech by Catherine Leybold is titled Sexual Assault Awareness.
Hi, my name is Catherine, and my topic is sexual assault awareness. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It's important to talk about sexual assault and establish what consent is in order to break down the stigma associated with these topics in the United States. With that in mind, I would like to take this opportunity to share my story. I was 18, a virgin fresh out of high school. I'd known him for years, and I had an intense teenage crush on him. We'd gone on a few dates, but he wasn't my boyfriend. One time we were out on a date, and things began to happen. I told him I wasn't ready to go all the way. I wasn't ready to have sex yet. But when I asked him to slow down, he didn't. He just kept pushing and pushing, and eventually I stopped saying no. But I never said yes. And when he penetrated me, I gave up. I told myself, just go along with it. It's already happening. And initially, he wore a condom, but then decided it didn't feel as good and took it off, refusing to put on another when I asked him to. When I got home, I told myself I was overreacting. I told myself I just didn't understand sex yet. I told myself there was nothing unusual or wrong about my experience. I told myself he was a good man and I had years of friendship to prove he was kind and caring. I told myself it wasn't sexual assault, but it was. I was sexually assaulted. I did not give him my consent. In fact, I verbally withheld consent by saying no. And I'm not the only one. 1 in 5 U.S. women face sexual violence in their lifetimes. 1 in 5. That is why it is so important to provide blame-free environments for women and survivors to share their stories and get the help that they need. Thank you.
That was Catherine Leybold's speech titled Sexual Assault Awareness. Up next is a speech by Jeanette Cowell titled Listen, Although We Don't Get to Speak Up.
Have you ever had the fear that one day you wake up finding yourself no longer American? You're not sure where you're from. You're not sure what is your future. Have you ever had the fear that standing in the crowd, listening to people singing at national anthem, you don't know the lyrics, you don't know the melody? I have, because I'm from Taiwan. So people oftentimes ask me, where are you from? I said, I'm from Taiwan. And then they were like, oh, I like Thai food. I was like, oh, okay, I like Thai food too, but okay. So just give you a little bit information about Taiwan. Taiwan is on the right-hand side of China and then beneath Japan. And then, I have to say, we are a democratic country. We have our own election. We have our own government. We have our own army. However, we've never been officially recognized as a country. Our big brother, you know who is our big brother, right? They still recognize part of their country. In Olympics, our victory, we cannot raise our national flags. On my passport, it say Taiwan, Republic of China. It's very sad. I have questioning myself when people ask me, are you a Chinese? I said, yes, I'm a Chinese as a race, but I'm from Taiwan. It's like, are you Hispanic? Are you Latino? But not necessarily saying, where are you from? I'm standing here, getting education in the United States, and I'm standing here, educate all my audience that as strong country grows, tariff wars, international trading wars, there are still countries struggling, fighting to get recognized. Thank you.
That was Jeanette Cao with her speech titled, Listen, Although We Don't Get to Speak Up. And you are listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts, more local shows, and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Christian Camargo. On this program, as you might already know, we record and broadcast many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, as well as some of the special events, such as the Hip Talks 2-Minute Speech Competitions that we are airing as part of today's program. Let's get back into the Hip Talks with a speech by Samantha Thorne titled, Heat, Pressure, and Lisps.
As a little girl, I had a well-defined lisp, a combination of an underdeveloped maxilla and a long tongue made saying words like strength and success quite a challenge. But that never stopped me from chattering away. At a second grade parent-teacher conference, when chided for distracting fellow classmates, my 7-year-old self responded, but don't you know, I'm just addicted to talking. This carefree attitude came crashing down 3 years ago as I watched home videos for the first time and really listened to how I spoke. Though I had never given my lisp a second thought while growing up, my adult self felt embarrassed. As my innocence and confidence took a hit, I resolved to improve myself. Throughout this process, I concluded that self-improvement comes at the cost of innocence and confidence. Loss of innocence and confidence served as heat and pressure in my personal refinement process. To transition away from my raw and naive state into a more well-spoken version of myself, I had to experience an uncomfortable process. Just like heat in a refinery separates crude materials into different compounds, realistically viewing my speech impediment separated myself into layers of strengths and weaknesses. I saw a flaw that needed perfecting. I had been mispronouncing strength and success my whole life. With heat comes pressure. With loss of innocence comes a drop in self-confidence. I placed pressure on myself to eliminate my lisp, putting pressure on myself to say my S's correctly. Today, as I voluntarily speak in a speech competition, I know that I've come a long way. So don't let the fear of a little heat and pressure stop you from becoming a stronger, more successful version of you.
That was Samantha Thorne with her speech titled, Heat, Pressure, and Lisps. This next speech is by Joanne Castillo and is titled, Magod sa iyong buhay.
Magandang gabi po sa inyo lahat. Ako po si Joanne Castillo. Ang title ng aking speech ay, My Gold sa iyong buhay. Oh, I'm sorry. Did my desire or my...
I'm sorry. I expected something different of you as I expected something different of myself. Okay, let's try that again, shall we? I am Joanne Castillo, and my speech is Maigold sa iyong buhay. So for those of you who actually deal with language issues or with needing different literacies or knowledge bases, as one of them, I stand with you. For those of you who run into situations and you don't know how to deal with them because your family has never been to school, has never been to a university before, I stand with you. Your experiences are valuable precisely because of the gold behind them. Your experiences are gold. And I ask you to get up. Keep getting up just like I did. To speak. Because in speaking, we actually change the world. We change who we are. We change what comes out. So I thank you. Thank you so much for bearing with me. Thanks.
That was Joanne Castillo with her speech titled Maigold sa iyong buhay. This next speech by Alexander Barton is titled Walk the Walk, Attitudes About Pedestrians.
Rosa Marino was in a marked crosswalk when she was struck and killed by a pickup truck. The single mother of three walked to work that day because the brakes in her car had been acting up. The police lieutenant assigned to the scene of the crash warned pedestrians to be so careful when you're crossing a road like this. That road was the 7-lane, colossal University Avenue, which cuts through the center of Provo like shears through delicate fabric. Pedestrians of all ages, some with special mobility needs, some pushing a child in a stroller, have only seconds to negotiate nearly 100 linear feet of concrete. The road, teeming with speeding cars and heavy trucks, is a formidable obstacle. Some, like Rosa, do not make it across. News emerged that the driver of the truck that hit Rosa, a 49-year-old man, had been distracted just moments before the collision, but the damage had already been done. A woman was dead, and the initial statement from police slighted her for wearing dark clothing. This is a scene that plays out every time someone is injured or killed in an auto-pedestrian collision. When 11-year-old Eric Longhurst was hit and killed in a marked crosswalk in Orem, an observer wondered why kids don't stop for cars anymore. Another said, pedestrians can see cars a lot better than cars can see pedestrians. And a third remarked, physics always wins. Pedestrians have to realize that. It was the second time Eric had been hit in that same intersection in just 2 years. Pedestrian fatalities reached a 25-year high in the United States last year, even as other types of traffic deaths have dropped steadily for more than a decade. Why is our knee-jerk reaction to blame the pedestrian? What if the driver were at fault, or the geometry of the road? Victim blaming seems particularly insidious when the victims have no opportunity to defend themselves. Each year, 6,000 pedestrians who are killed across the US cannot respond when we criticize their clothing choices or wonder why they weren't paying more attention. We have a problem. It is time to address the flaws in our infrastructure that contribute to so many needless fatalities every year. And it is time to stop wondering why our children, parents, grandparents, and friends are not utterly infallible every time they cross the road. Thank you.
That speech is titled Walk the Walk, Attitudes About Pedestrians, and is given by Alexander Barton. This next speech is by Kimiko Miyashima and is titled Ode to SoulCycle.
I used to work at SoulCycle Beverly Hills, which entailed wiping butt sweat off of stationary bikes at 5 a.m., listening to Alec Baldwin's Divorce Problems, and yes, getting Beyonce her room temp smart water. Three words, it was insane. Despite the celebrities, the good, the bad, and the Kardashians, there was one incident that impacted me forever. I was going about my normal SoulCycle front desk duties when we heard the studio door open. A woman stumbles out, she's tall, pale, and she sits on a bench. Protocol required us to run to the door and ask if she's okay. I check, she says she's fine. She'd only eaten a bite of granola bar that day. I look at her water and she had had one sip of her room temp smart water. It was past noon, so I knew we were in trouble. She leaned over to take off her shoes and she crumbles to the ground and stops breathing. Our staff had completed a CPR class, but we never thought we'd have to execute it. We looked around at each other, panicked, wide-eyed, even my manager. After what seemed like an eternity, I kneeled down and I said, grab the AED. When someone passes out, you want to wake them up without using the AED first, so I started slapping her face repetitively, screaming, "Wake up, lady! Hello!" It was hard to stay calm with my coworker over my ear screaming, "That woman is gonna die! Lord Jesus, she is not breathing!" So I started chest compressions. After a few, she woke up. The last thing she said to me before leaving was, "Please don't tell my husband. L.A. man." I received a Soul Collade, which is an accolade. I received this sweatshirt from the founders and was featured in the newsletter from New York City to Tribeca. It felt weird. I was just in the right place at the right time. But after reflecting, I did realize, hey, I stepped up. I think I might have saved her life. So this surreal event taught me three valuable things. One, take care of yourself. Hydrate, eat healthy, make sure you're proactive about your own health and body. Two, take initiative and step up to the plate. Don't be that person that takes over the group assignment or says yes to everything, but when the moment arises, step up, lead through action. And three, give yourself credit. Be humble, but recognize the work that you're doing and the greatness you've achieved. Because whether you're a front desk attendant or a CEO, you can make a big difference. So take care of yourself, step up, and give yourself credit. But I would suggest doing it in a setting where you don't have to wipe butt sweat off of bikes. Thank you.
That was Kimiko Miyoshima with her speech titled Ode to SoulCycle. Quick question. Does the name that you hold sum up who you are as a person? If not, what does? Well, in this next speech titled Names, speaker Shirley Zhao explores just that.
I have two names, but I am one person. I have a name that characterizes me as an American, representing years of assimilation and accommodation. A name conveying whiteness, citizenship, and conformity. A name that my friends know me by. Another that tells you I'm foreign. I moved to New Jersey from Shanghai when I was 9, and the first thing my mom did was rename me. She wanted the best for me. She wanted the world for me. She wanted me to be American. At age 9, I was given a name tag that wasn't mine, and when I asked why, they said, "So Americans can pronounce it." At that moment, a part of my identity was stripped away, the layers of my Chinese heritage tucked aside and having to survive in this land whose customs I now wear. I felt this big pendulum swing back and forth between my American and Chinese identities, and during this rhapsodic moment of my life, I lost a sense of who I am. When I first stepped onto this American soil, I was painted red, white, and blue, but this Made in China sticker was never removed, and through my personal melting pot, I tried to reconcile, yes, still. I feel a disconnect. So I continue to ask myself, why do I go by Shirley? Thank you.
That was Shirley Zhao with her speech titled Names. This next speech by Blake Marshall is titled The Smartphoneless Millennial.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It says on this paper that I'm Blake Marshall, but thanks, guys. I didn't get the no black and white memo, so awesome. Raise your hand, guys, if you have a smartphone. Oh, yeah, almost everybody in the room. Awesome. Except for me. For the past year, this little beauty has been my number one form of communication. This technical giant comes with 32 megabytes of memory, a camera that I'm told registers in pixels, and the cutting edge T9 predictive texting. I know, gasp. I've learned a lot in my 1 year without a smartphone. Yes, it's only been a year. But the first thing I've learned is that Google is not the only people that make maps. Crazy. I know. Number two, I'm awesome at Snake. I got the high score on my phone. And number three is that I was addicted to my smartphone. And I've learned to break that addiction over the last year. I went to Arches National Park recently. And for the first time ever, I went to a national park and did a hike without expecting to get an awesome photo for my Instagram. Like every good Utah outdoor enthusiast, I went to the Delicate Arch. Instead of snapping photos and taking selfies, I just sat and I enjoyed the majesty of this emblem of our state. I enjoyed the wild place that I was living in. And it was almost a spiritual experience that I don't think I would have had if I had had my iPhone with me. So my invitation to you tonight is the next time you have the opportunity to experience something amazing, view it through your eyes and not through your screen. Thank you.
That speech is titled "The Smartphone-less Millennial," given by Blake Marshall. If you're just joining us, we are airing the Hinckley Institute of Politics' 4th annual Hip Talks, a compilation of great 2-minute speeches meant to amuse, entice, and educate. Based on the topics of the speakers' choosing, these speakers compete for a shot at the cash prizes awarded to the most successful and enjoyable monologue. Up next is a speech by Madeline Lamas titled "The History of America."
My name is Madeline Lamas, and I'm a business major here. In 2010, I moved here from Guinea, West Africa at the age of 15, where I started high school. So all through our high school and some of college, I learned about great American and European leaders and their accomplishments, you know, disregarding the fact that some of their accomplishments did cause the misfortune for so many people. For example, from Christopher Columbus to George Washington to Abraham Lincoln. Who doesn't like Abraham Lincoln? I love Abe Lincoln. You gotta love the man. So disregard the fact that some of the accomplishments did cause misfortunes. For example, how Christopher Columbus's discoveries did cause the displacement and killing of many non-white leader families eventually. Or disregard the fact that the fame of Abraham Lincoln sprung from people like me being treated as 3/5 of a person. Disregard all of that, and I still was very impressed at a community and society that so held their heritage so strong and recounted it every day. Imagine thus my dismay and my surprise when a coworker accused me of victimizing myself simply because I brought up the topics of colonization and slavery. So why? Why is it that people like Abraham Lincoln and Christopher Columbus can tell their story, but I can't? Why is it that you can tell your story, but I can't? As far as I'm concerned, we are the same people. Let me rephrase that. We are two people on different ends of the same spectrum. I just happen to be on the darker side of it, and you just happen to be on the lighter side of it. But as far as I'm concerned, there is blood circling through both of us. And I'm sorry if I intimidate you, but I hope you know I work hard. I work hard to make life easier for you and for myself and for my family, who is still back there, hoping that one day I can come back and help them out. So like James Baldwin, I say, ugly or not, beautiful or not, the history of the black man in America is, and may I add, always will be the history of America. So take a deep breath. Stand up. Hold my hand and walk with me. Because together, and only then, can you and I, no, forget that. Let me rephrase that. Can we affect change? Thank you.
That was Madeline Lamas with her speech titled "The History of America." This next speech is by Davis Green and is titled "Do It Scared."
I want you to think of something that you really want to do, but it scares you. Got it? In sixth grade, I had a crush on a girl named Danielle. She was a cutie, and I was in love. But I was terrified. You see, I was really shy back then. On top of all of that, I had a speech impediment. I wanted to talk to her, but I was just too scared. I went to a retirement home recently, and I found there's a theme to their stories: regret. Not for the things they did, but for the things they didn't do. I never saw the Eiffel Tower. I never started that business. I didn't tell my son that I love him enough. We think that every breath we take is guaranteed. It's not. We could walk out that door and die today. And with us, our dreams. Dead. Gone. No one is going to do them. Those were yours. We should learn a lesson from the wise and don't wait. Do those things now and do them scared. And when you do that thing you thought of at the beginning of this talk, you might be surprised of the outcome. I was. Back in sixth grade, I decided not to wait anymore. I came to school and I wrote Danielle a note. Dear Danielle, I like you. Love, Davis. I passed the note shaking in fear. She wrote back, 4 words. I like you too. Don't wait. Do it today. Thank you.
That was Davis Green with his speech titled, Do It Scared. And you are listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts, more local shows, and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Christian Camargo. Today on the program, we are featuring student speeches from this year's 2-Minute Speech Competition, the 4th Annual Hip Talks. And now, to the Hip Talks winners. Student Amy O'Neill was one of the runner-ups in the 2-Minute Speech Competition. Here's her speech titled, Why Some of Us End the Fight.
My name is Amy O'Neill. Someone is going to die today, but I'm not referring to any of you. I'm talking about my brothers and sisters, the ones who keep fighting after the war, after the uniform has been put away for good. Now, I can't speak for all veterans, of course, but some come home broken, including myself, and all we want is for the pain to end so we can be happy and healthy. But the road to this recovery is where some of us get lost, trying to battle traumatic memories we can't escape. It can get so bad that some of us can barely leave our beds because we're too terrified or apathetic to face the world outside. Sometimes we forget how to love and be loved, pushing everyone away until we're fighting on our own. And that's not what we're used to. See, fighting alone's not an option in the military. We're constantly surrounded by those who have our back. We endure hell together and we grow stronger together. It's where we found a brotherhood for which we were willing to die. And then we leave, and suddenly that life is gone, along with the irreplaceable family that comes with it. And while some vets are unaffected by this transition, others find it difficult to readjust. We try therapy, the groups, the books, the breathing, the pills, but these aren't always enough. So we find ways to escape, to suppress our thoughts and emotions, to forget that we're alone. We numb ourselves with a fifth of whiskey, a joint, or some oxy, anything to stave off reality, all while letting others administer pain we think we deserve. But if we're too broken, if we're too lost, if we're just too alone, sometimes it becomes too much, and we forget that we are still worth fighting for. So we pull the trigger, we swallow the pills, we tie the noose. That's how roughly 20 of my brothers and sisters end the fight for their life every single day. Thank you.
And that was Amy O'Neill, one of the winning runner-ups in this year's 2-Minute Speech Competition. Her speech is entitled, Why Some of Us End the Fight. Their next runner-up winner to give their talk is Mohan Sudhapatula. His speech is entitled, It's Time We Had the Talk.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mohan Sudhapatula. Okay, so I'm not going to beat around the bush. We've all heard of the talk, right? You know, the talk that hopefully all of us had anywhere between ages 10 to 12, where we sit down with a trusted adult and we get some real adult knowledge dropped on us, probably for the first time in our lives. Yeah, I remember when I had my talk. The same talk that all brown and black boys across America get, where we're told that we can't be like our peers and that we need to be aware of our presence and our appearance for the rest of our lives because we will be judged for something that we can't control, our skin. I remember in elementary school in the months following September 11th, and my first grade class slowly started to distance themselves from me and stop talking to me because they were told not to associate with the face of terror. I remember how much I hated bringing lunch from home into the middle school cafeteria because I knew that the moment I opened that foil and the cafeteria smelled like the aromas of my house, that I would be mocked and ridiculed for wanting to eat something that my mother made me. I remember when I met my girlfriend of 5 years in high school and we first started dating, that we were told that we shouldn't be together and that it was ugly for us to hold hands and that I should date someone that's my kind. See, we don't talk about sex in puberty because we want to or because it's comfortable. No, we talk about sex in puberty to the younger generation at such a vulnerable age because it's necessary for them to hear in order to be healthy, functioning adults. Well, it's time we talk about racial prejudice the same way. It's a ridiculous suggestion to say that we need to have a required maturation program for incoming students at the U because we expect them to know about their bodies. We expect them to know how to function in society. But how can our kids know what racial prejudice looks like and the impacts it has on society if we never talk about it? It needs to change. It's time we had the talk. Thank you.
That's Mohan Sudhapatula, one of the four winning runner-ups in this year's Hip Talks 2-Minute Speech Competition. His speech is entitled, It's Time We Had the Talk. Here's the next winner runner-up, Brianna Crosby. Her 2-minute speech is titled, The Things They Told Me.
My name is Brianna Crosby, and my speech is called, The Things They Told Me. We all have things that our families and communities tell us over and over again. These things shape our worldview and color the decisions that we make. Like you probably were, I was told that I could do anything I wanted to do. I could be anything I set my mind to. But more than anything else, they told me that we put family first, because family is the most important. They told me I could be a doctor, an engineer, or even the president. But they also told me that my children would be harmed if I worked outside the home. That of course I could do anything, it's just that my children, or that the family is being undermined. So we have to make sacrifices to save the family. They also told me we should use politics to preserve the family. Except in 2016, that didn't seem to factor into their decisions. They told me they didn't want higher taxes, plus there was just something about that woman that they didn't like. And so they voted for the other guy. The guy who embodies all the social ills they told me are ruining families. But they had to vote for him, they said. Never mind any concern for families who aren't like mine. Families who are refugees or who don't have the right papers. Families who do not share our religion or have the same financial resources. Never mind them. And that woman, somehow keeping her family together became her liability. They told me she did it for political gain, but even if that were true, I imagine it was extremely difficult. Shouldn't we applaud her success? Because I've been told that family is the most important. They told me it's not that they don't want women in positions of power. They just think men are better suited to it. I can do anything I set my mind to, as long as I set my mind to the right thing. Because don't forget, family is the most important. But when it came down to it, it was only their family that was most important. Those other families didn't matter. And voting against their family values was seen as acceptable in order to keep that woman from power. It turns out, when they said we have to sacrifice for the family, they only meant me. They told me it would have been different had it been any other woman. But I choose not to believe the things they tell me anymore.
And that was Brianna Crosby, one of the winning runner-ups in this year's Hip Talks. Her speech is entitled, The Things They Told Me. The next and final runner-up winner of the four to give their talk is Alexis Alzada.
My name is Alexis Alzada, and my speech is called, The First Step is Admitting We Have a Problem. In 2015, I moved to Utah for rehab. I was 23 years old, had dropped out of college, was living with my parents, and I was deeply and desperately addicted to OxyContin. I considered suicide more seriously than I considered getting sober. Luckily, my family sent me to Utah. And now, with almost 3 years sober, my life looks nothing like it did then. I'm about to graduate college on the dean's list. I have a dog, I have a job who I love, and in the fall, I'll be going to law school. It wasn't until I got sober that I began reading about this opioid epidemic that is and has been ravaging our country for years. I realized there are hundreds of thousands of people just like me. There are also hundreds of thousands of people who weren't so lucky, whose families mourn their too short lives, or those who spend time in jails and institutions while I'm up at Snowbird. The American Medical Association classified addiction as a disease in 1987. Yet, like heart disease and diabetes, addiction isn't just a matter of genetics. Some would argue Americans have such high rates of heart disease because of our diet. So yes, we blame McDonald's and we ask for regulation. In this case, It's time we start placing blame on the pharmaceutical companies that make billions of dollars over the millions of lives being affected. It's time we demand some regulation. I've met average people who became addicted after a car accident or a torn shoulder. Although there were alternatives, although they could have been given lesser doses, they were given OxyContin, a drug that was originally prescribed to patients dying of cancer. Our doctors are incentivized to overprescribe these drugs to us. That means you, your mother, your sister are all susceptible to becoming addicts. And in such an unfortunate case, if you were to overdose on opiates, the one drug that can save your life, naloxone, has been priced at over $1,000 by the very same pharmaceutical company that put the OxyContin in your hand to begin with. America, the first step is admitting that we have a problem. And if you can't see that something is wrong here, well, you must be high.
And that was Alexis Alzada, the last of the four winning runner-ups in this year's HipTalk's two-minute speech competition. Her speech is entitled, Step 1, Admit We Have a Problem. Next, the winner of the audience favorite goes to Takara DeTavis with her speech titled, Why We Thrive.
My name's Takara, and I'm a communications major here at the University of Utah. You have a superpower. Not flight, super speed, or invisibility. But a power so formidable, it has shaped your life and the lives of everyone you meet. A power so ubiquitous, we live with it, like fish live with water, without question. Humans, when considered individually, are vulnerable and weak. We are born utterly defenseless. We have no fur to protect us from the elements, nor claws or sharp teeth to protect us from predators. One man alone in nature dies, but a dozen can thrive. 100 can build a community, and 1 million will rule the world. Our single evolutionary advantage is society. Our ability to create ever larger groups from familial to global is how we have tamed nature and created standards of living that other species find inconceivable. Independence may enable freedom, but societies can put footsteps on the moon. Your superpower is the uniquely human ability to create, understand, and maintain a complex web of social relationships far beyond just the people you've met. We are not the only species with communities, but we are the only ones capable of understanding and building cultures that can support enormously complex societies. This size of mammals' brains closely correlates with the size of their social groups, and our larger groups enable greater interdependency, specialization, mutual benefit, the accumulation and dissemination of knowledge. It is through large groups that humans accomplish all things great and terrible. Individual success and happiness depends on this superpower. Our collective survival depends on this power. The misanthropes among us are wrong. Our capacity for unity is greater than our potential for division. Cooperation is in our genes. It is our evolutionary imperative that we work together. It drives us. It supports us. It defines us. If we are to survive as a species, if we are to fulfill our potential and build a world worthy of our children's inheritance, it will only be done together. Thank you.
That speech was awarded for audience favorite. Delivering that is Takara DeTavis, and the title of her speech, Why We Thrive. And finally, the grand prize winner was Karina Rivera for her speech titled, Don't Cry, Little Girl.
My name is Karina Rivera, and my speech is entitled, Don't Cry, Little Girl. I was nervous, intimidated, and afraid. It was my first day in school in the United States, and it was middle school. And suddenly, I found myself surrounded by four angry boys pointing their fingers at my face, saying, go back to Mexico, you wetback. This is America, I speak English. I knew enough English to understand what they were telling me, but not enough to defend myself. In frustration, I went home and went straight to my bedroom, and I sobbed out of anger. My mom came in and sat by my bed and just waited. I told her what happened, what these boys had done. I said, I want to go back to my old friends, and I do not ever want to go back to school. She said, not feeling sorry for myself, Karina, we came here so you could get an education, so that you can have a shot for a better life. And even though you don't speak English right now, just know this. El que es bilingüe vale por dos. He who is bilingual is worth double. And then she just finished by saying, "Are you going to allow ignorance stop you from being successful in life?" If I could go back and talk to my 12-year-old self, I would say, "Don't cry, little girl. The bullying wears off in high school. Stay focused and study hard, because the best insurance for a woman is an education. You will fulfill your parents' dream, and you will go get a college degree and even an MBA. You will have success in life, and you will get that better life. But just know, my little girl, that none of that will happen to you if you don't learn today que el que es bilingüe vale por dos. Gracias."
That was Karina Rivera with her speech titled "Don't Cry, Little Girl," in which awarded her as a grand prize winner in this year's 2018 Hip Talks. Unfortunately, because of time, we didn't get to air every speech for the Hip Talks finale. However, if you would like to hear more of the Hip Talks speeches, you can find them under the webpage for this program at kcpw.org. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Christian Camargo, your producer and host of this program. Thanks for listening.